Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete. Presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
Hi, I'm Greg Camp, and we're back on U Sports Now. Time for our regular Peak Performance segment with Mike Naparelli. You know, it's funny, one of my favorite old television shows, I guess I shouldn't say old, but television shows is Cheers, where Norm walks in and everybody yells Norm, and where everybody knows his name. And Mike, you know, when you come into the station, everybody's Mike, so everybody knows your name and what you do. You know, Mike, before we get into some of the specific talk about some of the ACL injuries and things that we've talked about the last weeks, just to finish up the segment that we just did on overall coaching and learning and all that stuff, you know, we were talking about how important it is to learn in practice, and that's where you teach. That's where you work with the kids and the athletes to learn their trade, if you will, on the court, on the ice, on the field. You know, you obviously have some very important opinions of that because you're seeing the result if you don't.
I'll give you two examples. One is, you know, we talked a bunch of weeks ago. I was doing some training with Brian Jacobs, who's the Nike golf pro out at Mill Creek, and I've had some lessons from him. And it was a great example to me of the value of having a lesson from a professional where they really look at your technique. So he had me out on the driving range. You know, he put his hands in the club and he's just having me slowly go through portions of the swing and showing me what it should look like. And he's talking about creating muscle memory. Mm-hmm. And you got to do it slow before you do it quick. And we talked about the struggles that golfers have when they go out on the golf course and they play live and expect it all to change all of a sudden. And we talked a bit about how you've got to go to the driving range and actually practice it with intention, with specific goals in mind, rehearsal swings, getting a groove before you're going to create a change. You can't just go there, take a few swings, think you own the change, take a few swings, go on the course and play and think it's going to be there.
Right.
You don't change on the playing field. The change comes through practice. And it was just a great illustration to me. And he said, had such a great benefit in my swing already in a short time. But he's got me practicing in ways I wasn't practicing before. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm the guy I'm talking about.
Sure.
I practice. I don't have a chance to play very often, so I practice when I'm playing, which hasn't worked really well.
Isn't that the day that the club head flew off the...
I was practicing when that happened.
Okay, good.
I wasn't on the course. I was practicing.
Good.
Yes, the club head flew off.
All right, let's get into, you know, we've been talking last week about ACL injuries, and, you know, we ended with some discussion about female athletes and the fact that they tend to injure their ACLs more frequently. And in fact, we are setting up that cheerleading and female athlete gymnastics section for the show in the coming weeks. But, you know, let's talk a little bit more about the ACL injuries, the fact that there may be a tendency for female athletes to have a higher injury. And then, of course, even maybe what goes through their mind when these things happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things is that oftentimes an athlete, when they're younger, they haven't had a lot of injuries before. So they're sort of riding this wave of feeling like they're bulletproof. And it can be a real big slap in the face of their ego to suddenly realize that their body is fallible. Sometimes that kind of swings the pendulum a bit to the side of becoming fearful.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's athletes who sometimes are going through that process in their mind of, you know, do I really want to play again? Is this worth it? I'm afraid of this. And so there's some of those things that sometimes we have to work to get out of them to see what they're feeling like. And I think most athletes, when these sort of things happen, tend to be a little bit less cavalier about it. Some show it more than others, but certainly when it's something bigger that requires a surgery and many, many, many months off, sometimes there is that internal concern and distress over, well, could it happen again?
Sure.
I didn't think it was going to happen the first time. And when we talk about ACLs, you know, oftentimes, not often, but sometimes, it happens a second time. And whether it's the same knee or the other knee, you know, again, those athletes are wondering whether or not they're ever going to go back and play again. And so we really want to have that discussion with them and try and help them understand a bit. You know, they're going through the struggle of, do I want to go back and play and essentially take the chance that I could get hurt again and have to go through the hassles, the time off from playing and participating in my sport, the pain, mm-hmm. the stress of surgery versus the stresses of imagining what it's like to give up my sport and not be with my friends and do the thing I love. the good news is the great majority of kids choose to play, and they're able to do that. But it is one of those stressors that they deal with.
What about, Mike, a stressor, and I don't know if this is something that you see, and I'm talking about something very specific, actually. But I had an athlete who had it was I shouldn't say simple, but it was arthroscopic knee surgery. And the parents came to me as a coach, and they said that the fear was not in wanting to come back and to play again. The fear was literally sitting on the trainer's table after the surgery, after the stitches had been taken out, even during physical therapy. And they said that their son's biggest worry was psychologically he didn't want to bend the knee. And I think often, you know, I had arthroscopic surgery, you know, back when I think it was probably invented. But I remember being hesitant to bend that knee. I was scared. How does a kid get through some sort of psychological stressor like that to not only get back on the field and play because they want to, but now they got to do something like, ooh, geez, you know, Mr. Naparella, this is going to hurt.
Yeah, that's an awesome question. I think it's not just kids and it's certainly not just knees. What you described happens in our clinic hour to hour every single day from, you know, age 8 to age 60, 70, whatever, depending on what procedure was done. And those feelings are very common, and oftentimes after, you know, not just surgeries, but sometimes just an injury, but especially a surgery. You've got incisions, the scars can get a little stiff, you've got some swelling, you certainly have pain from the trauma that was done. It was good trauma, it was needed to fix the problem, but it produces a trauma as well. Just cutting the skin to get down in there and fix it is a stress to the body. And so that can produce pains, and that's, you know, one reason why we really love our profession is that we get to help people through that. Because your natural reaction would be, hey, it hurts, don't move it. And by going through the training that we've gone through, we can try to educate people and help them understand why what they're doing is safe. You know, very often those doctors have given some guidelines as to what's safe and what's not from the surgical standpoint. So we can help educate them that what they're doing isn't going to damage the tissues that were fixed. It's also really helpful when they're in a clinic where people are going through some common things. You know, Mary might be on the table here, but Bob's on the table right next to her. He had that surgery 3 months ago. And Bob's over there encouraging Mary, hey, you can get through this. I had a shoulder like yours 3 months ago. Or Jimmy's over there, and he sees Susie's over there throwing a ball around or serving a tennis ball into our cage. And now Jimmy sees, wow, I you know, to me it feels like this could never get better. I can't imagine being an athlete. I can't even move my arm right now.
Right.
And when they see someone else going through that, that gives them some encouragement. So we try to do that through education. And I think a big thing with what we do is that we really understand biomechanics well. So we really try not to get stuck in a rut of saying, here's the drill to raise your arm up. And when they do that, it hurts. It feels like it's a constant struggle. But we can tweak the way they're twisted or the path they're going through very subtly to try to get them to be as comfortable as possible. And we really believe that we need to deal in successes. Too often in physical therapy, the traditional way has been, hey, you can't do that.
Right.
And what do they do? Well, I'm going to make you do it. And instead of approaching it that way, we really want to try to show them what we want, what we need to get to, but then get there by successes and not by forcing them into failure, because that so often is painful and it produces a lot of guarding. And that's where a lot of that distrust and uncertainty and distress happens on a patient's part.
And it's also a situation where, I mean, I know the folks at Peak Performance at your place, Mike, you know, Peak Performance Physical Therapy is a place where the people truly care. So it's not a biomechanical factory, if you will. It's the folks there care and they understand what's going on both mentally and physically for these athletes. You know, one thing that we promise our listeners, and I want to make sure we get to it today, is this whole concept of protocol. You know, when a doctor does something, you know, surgically, he's giving a protocol for how the rehab goes. So how does that protocol occur, and what's the process? And then, you know, how does it work with you guys where you've essentially, you know, been given the orthopedist, you know, I guess maybe some direction. He's given direction to you of what he was looking, what he or she's looking for. So let's talk a little bit about the protocols.
I like that question because sometimes, you know, there's a bit of a, I guess we'd call it a security blanket that can be had in a protocol. And that security blanket, it can really be felt on both sides. It can be felt on the patient side. It gives them a little bit of planning and organization to what the future might look like. And for some therapists, it gives a comfort in terms of having this pre-planned set of guidelines to follow. But our challenge with that is sometimes it causes people to lay back and not think too much.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. Protocols do exist. And this question is almost a bit of a setup because we like protocols, but we also want to be very careful about protocols. And here's the reason why. And we do see, by the way, surgeons completely vary, physicians vary, as to whether or not they have a specific protocol. Some have a specific protocol and have communicated, do not deviate. Others have given protocols and told us, we really want you to think for yourself. You're a well-trained therapist. You've been to school to do this a long time. You know therapy better than I do. But for those who don't feel too comfortable, we have a protocol. But I want you to think outside the box, and I want you to contact me, and let's have discussions about ideas you have. And we really love working with physicians like that because, listen, to be an orthopedic surgeon, you've got to be incredibly intelligent. You've got to have a very caring heart. You're going to be working for serving other people all day long. And they're very gifted people, but their training was in medicine. Their training was not in rehabilitation. And so, you know, we have that same sort of spirit of wanting to have, you know, be giving and caring for people and trying to help people. But we don't have the training a physician does. So we really appreciate and honor the physicians and really want to respect the protocols that they put out there. But we really want to, as best we can, have a working dialogue with them. And so many physicians will give us a protocol, and ACL is a great example. And usually those are based on biological healing constraints. So there's certain things we know at 2 or 3 or 4 weeks you really don't want to do to an ACL that's healing. There's other things that, you know, need to wait for maybe 3 months. And there's other things that we really want to see wait until 4 or 5 or 6 months. And so many of those stresses and the definitions on a protocol are just based on the biology of healing. But what we really like, when a physician gives a protocol that has some guidelines on it, that sort of serves as boundaries where they're giving us a flavor of the things they want and don't want.
Sure.
But we all need to understand that from the day-to-day decision, moment to moment, minute to minute, week by week, visit by visit, that an ACL patient, for example, has to go through in the clinic with their physical therapist when we see them, are things that we've got to make decisions on and choose and think rationally and be problem-solving and analytical moment to moment. Some of those answers aren't on the protocol sheet.
Right.
Every single exercise that we do isn't on the protocol sheet. And so we've got to be thinking for ourselves. And so it's really important to us that people understand that when you go to a physical therapy clinic, Greg, you shouldn't feel like you're treated like a number. You shouldn't feel like someone has a piece of paper with your diagnosis on it. And what's going to happen is from the top to the bottom of that paper, they're going to follow that sheet almost blindly. Now, I hope that most therapists out there don't do that. I don't think most do. But there are certainly those who tend to rely on the protocol more and others who use it as a guideline. And we really feel it's really incredibly important because of that biomechanical approach we take to look at you as an individual. So you ask the question about what do you do with that protocol? We will use the protocol as a boundary, as a guideline, as a healing constraint menu for us. But within that, there's a lot of choices that need to be made. And I think that for an athlete who's coming back from a significant injury like that, the only way they're going to develop that confidence, and we would say, we're going to build your confidence by making you competent. And how are you going to be competent? Well, this is really what an athlete's saying to us, Greg. I hurt my knee when I landed on it, and my knee buckled to the inside when I turned away in the other direction. That's what happened when I blew my knee out and I heard a pop. What they're really saying when they come in is they're saying, you know what? I need you to help me do that same thing again.
Right.
And this time not get hurt. So I think that one of the challenges that traditional physical therapy can have is that sometimes we have the blinders on and we're living in a very constrained environment of saying, here's the safe direction to move in and keep moving forward and backward only. Don't do any side to side. Don't do any twisting. And then what do we see? Well, now it's 5 months out.
Right,
it's time to start
agilities.
And we say, hey, start jogging and let your knee move a little bit side to side and twist it. And let's see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
And we really feel like that can start not quite at day one, but in small ways, very early on. If we really understand biomechanics, we can help that athlete make headway to gradually, in small steps, feel more and more competent. And so that question we talked about is what's going through their minds. One of the things that we see in an athlete who's gone through a significant surgery, like a a labral repair or an ACL reconstruction, it's stressful in that first month or so.
Sure.
They're in more pain. They're very constrained. They're not even living normal life yet. But there's a different stress that hits them when they get 3 and 4 and 5 months out, because now there gets to be this little bit of a weight on their chest of feeling like, I'm supposed to start looking like I can play a sport here soon.
Right.
Now, am I going to be the one who's successful and I'm going to make it back and I'm going to do it in the reasonable time frame?
Mm-hmm.
Or am I getting behind? You know, how do I know I'm not going to get hurt again?
Right.
And I think that the key, a big key to helping them get along there, is to make sure that we're thorough in our analysis of them. We don't treat them like a sheet of paper, but we've got to make sure we analyze them. So in a knee, a perfect example is, you better look at that hip. You've got to look at that foot. We have to look at your other knee. I've had ACL kids, for example, who had an old ankle sprain on the other ankle. It was missing 30 or 40% of its range of motion. And it would be very easy when you watch them land and look at how they squat and move to see that their body's actually avoiding that. Let's say it's their right knee.
Mm-hmm.
They're avoiding the right side because the ankle just isn't right. They tell me they feel fine, but that may have a lot to do with how that left knee got hurt. That's not a protocol sheet. That's being thoughtful and problem-solving oriented.
So basically what Mike is saying is, in my Greg Camp simple terms, is it's about caring, it's about communication, and it's really about understanding the biomechanics. And you know what? There's no place better to do it than Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training. So give Mike and his team a call, and you will be glad that you did. When I come back, we will have a little bit of thoughts from this dugout of mine on this Halloween week.
Don't go away. There's more Youth Sports Now to come on WYSL 92.1 FM, 1040 AM.